Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
D-Mace, Vingen and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingen, and Connor Newt here with you. We'll be listening at the top of the hour because it's Friday. It's the off season. So we, as we always like to do, it's going to be Ask D-Mace at 5 o'clock. So if you've got questions for Derek, start thinking of them now. You can call or text us at 615-737-1025. But yesterday, we had Elliot Freeman of Sportsnet on the program. And right before we came on the air yesterday, Elliot released a bombshell report, I guess you could say, that Detroit Red Wings captain Dylan Larkin has requested a trade from the only organization he has ever known in his NHL career. And as soon as I mentioned that on the air, we received multiple text messages. Should the Predators go after Dylan Larkin? Dylan Larkin? Dylan Larkin? So I thought that would be a good conversation to have. I wanted to wait until Willie was back to have it so we could have the full house here to discuss it. So Dylan Larkin, as many of you know, I'm going to read directly from Emily Kaplan's story on ESPN.com. Quote, Larkin is in the middle of a long-term contract that pays him $8.7 million annually and runs through the 2030-30-31 season. Or, yes, 2030-30-31 season. Yep. The center, who played a key lockdown role for Team USA in winning gold at the 2026 Olympics, will be highly coveted across the league, especially in the summer, when there are very few high-profile free agents. Larkin has been a consistent offensive contributor, scoring at least 30 goals and 67 points in each of the last five seasons, while emerging as one of the best defensive forwards and penalty killers in the league. So now that the Nashville Predators have a new president of hockey operations and GM, Chris McFarland, it was also announced today that Nashville has hired former LA GM and Hockey Hall of Famer Rob Blake to be the executive vice president of hockey operations. So a new front office. Dylan Larkin, he's going to be 30 years old, I want to say, before next season begins.
He turns 30 on July 30th.
Yes.
So he is not yet 30.
He will be 30 when the season starts. So let's indulge this conversation. Is now the time for Chris McFarland, at the helm of the Nashville Predators, to make a splash to start off his Predators career by going after Dylan Larkin? I will quickly answer my own question, and then I will hand it over to Willie. My answer to this question is no. I don't think the Predators should go after Dylan Larkin. I just don't see a fit from what Larkin reportedly wants and where I think the Predators could be going this offseason. Larkin, to me, as someone who I believe has only made the playoffs once in his NHL career, he just tasted what winning was like at the Olympics. It feels like Larkin, who has a no-trade clause, would want to go somewhere where he knows that competing for the Stanley Cup right now is at the top of the priority list. So we can get into it a little bit more, but my gut tells me, Willie, no, I don't think this is the time for the Predators to pursue someone such as Dylan Larkin.
Now that the Predators have a GM, it's a little clearer on how to answer a question like this, and I will only go by what Chris McFarland said in the press conference. We're so much at the beginning of his tenure here. He said more than once, we're probably not going to target a player in a certain age category. Now, Dylan Larkin is probably right on the edge of that, I would say. I think a guy that's been as durable and as consistent as he's been, to me, he is a heck of a player. I wouldn't say he's a superstar, but he's a star. He's a star player. He is a consistent. He has had five consecutive 30-goal seasons, and he is a center. a center. You don't find those guys. So we have had this conversation before. It is rare that somebody like this says, I want out. It's rare that somebody like this becomes available at a price tag that is set for a long time. And in this salary cap, with the cap as high as it is, $8.7 million for a center that does what he does, that is not a bad contract at all. That is juicy.
Now, what do you think it would take to acquire a guy like that? What would the Predators have to give up?
Well, this is, I think, why Chris McFarland is in a good position, because they have everything in-house to be able to make them an offer that would have them go, if Dylan Larkin says, yeah, I'd go to Nashville. Now, that's a very important question. Like you said, Adam, he's controlling the shots. He's got a no trade. He could say, nah, Nashville, their guys are old. I want something that's more like in a window right now. I don't know if Nashville's in the window. That could very well happen. Or he could say, hey, man, I've heard great things about Nashville. Great place to live. I don't know what Dylan Larkin wants. I don't know if he's single or married, but as we've has been said, not by me, but by Elliot Friedman and many. If you're single, you got a lot going on in Nashville.
Yeah. If you're family, you got a lot going on.
If you got family, you got a lot going on in Nashville. Mm-hmm. So they have a lot to offer. So I think it would be, now this is the interesting thing to me, is Detroit has been trying to get there for a long time. They thought they were there 2 or 3 years ago, and it just hasn't blossomed. All these things that they've done to be very patient with a lot of assets, it hasn't hit. They've been okay, but you know, we throw around mushy middle. They're in the mushy middle. They've gone through the hard work of the rebuild to get to the mushy middle, and they truly are stuck in the mushy middle. Now you got your best center and captain saying you want out. That's tricky for them. So is Detroit going to want a bunch of first-round picks? And no, they've been doing that for over a decade now.
But if you're the Red Wings and your captain, your number one center, your perennial all-star is telling you, I don't want to be here anymore. I haven't studied the Red Wings roster or prospect system, but I don't think the Red Wings have someone ready to replace Dylan Larkin. I'm wondering if that decision forces them to take that step back, which is why such a deal could be futures heavy, such as draft picks and prospects.
Now, you tell me if that fan base in that city is going to go for that.
Derek,
they've already been through it. Yeah. They've been through it. They don't want to start back over.
The Red Wings, by the way, now have the longest active playoff drought in the NHL now that the Buffalo Sabres have made the playoffs. It's, what, 10 consecutive seasons? And remember, this was a franchise that made the playoffs 25 seasons in a row. And since that streak ended, 0-10, I think.
What, four cups, I think, in that stretch?
Sounds right, yep. Late 90s.
Two in a row, right before the Predators entered the league.
Right before the salary cap.
Yep, and then
and then they beat the Penguins in one of the back-to-back final series.
They beat the Predators in the first round that year, 0-8, and then won the whole thing. So that, you know, that fan base is starved. They don't want to hear. And look, they've got one of their all-time legend idols that's been running it, Steve Yzerman, or as Bill Clinton once called him after they won the cup and they went to the White House, Steve Yzerman.
That's a fancy way to say it.
Like their captain, Steve Yzerman.
It's like Adam Bill. Vignon.
Yes.
Hey, Bill.
Steak.
But that intrigues me. To me, there's going to be some conversation going on. Hey, wait a minute, Dylan. I think there's going to be try to talk him out of it mode for a while before they actually put him out there on the market. But this leads us to something that Elliot's been talking about, Adam, that you brought up during the break, this maybe some players are trying to use some leverage and say, you know what, I'm a star player, and yeah, I want out. I'm going to try to force the issue here.
It feels
James Harden style. There's been plenty of NBA players that have done it over the years, and players in other sports.
Elliot made the point on his podcast that it feels like, and this is me paraphrasing Elliot, it feels like the player empowerment era in the NHL has started. I remember we threw that term around a lot in the NBA not too long ago. But starting with Matthew Tkachuk leaving Calgary for Florida, he said, I'm not re-signing in Calgary. Here's where I want to go. I'm not going somewhere where I won't sign an extension. And that sort of got the ball rolling. The other thing, the other interesting thing too is, think about the all of these players who helped Team USA win gold. Matthew Tkachuk was part of that team. Quinn Hughes was part of that team, and he had a similar situation. Maybe Dylan Larkin, also a member of Team USA, got the itch there as well. But it does feel like the NHL is starting to experience that. Back to Larkin, I saw this from Jack Hahn, who is a coach and consultant for NHL and other hockey teams. And he said, quote, Larkin in a nutshell, 1C on an average team, 2C on a great one. And I would agree with that. If he were here, I would assume he would overtake Ryan O'Reilly as the team's number one center. I think you can call the Predators at the moment an average team. But Willie, you said Dylan Larkin and Ryan O'Reilly as your top six centers? It's an interesting idea.
I think you'd have two great number two centers is what I think is what you would have.
And what if O'Reilly is a part of the package? What if they want O'Reilly?
But the problem that Detroit would have in that, because I can see where you're going, Derek, is like if you're Steve Yzerman, you're saying, you know, I've done all this work to put this team together. I don't want to go backwards. I want somebody that's going to replace Dylan Larkin. But if Dylan Larkin is using his leverage and he says, I'm going to tell you what teams I'm going to go to, then they're not. Detroit is not in a good bargaining position, and that has happened to some teams before. And you have to sort of be careful and get what you can get. I'm sure they would ask for Ryan O'Reilly, and you know what? Just from the top, from an asset standpoint, a guy that's five and a half years younger, whatever it is, you swap those two guys out. You've got a younger asset. That's worth talking about. I would be surprised. But here's where I'm going with it. And Adam, let me make the argument on the other side of what you're saying, because it's easy to say, nah, you know, they're not there. Let's go younger. But this goes back to when you have the assets to strike for a guy. If Dylan Larkin puts Nashville on a short list, and you only have to compete with say five or six other teams that he says I'm willing to go here, and you're trading me one of these teams I want out of here, then Detroit's in kind of a pickle, and you are in a good bargaining position. So if you're looking for really good assets that don't come along very often, then I would look at it. I would go for it. Why not?
I mean, look, Dylan Larkin, as we mentioned earlier in the conversation, here are his past five seasons with the Red Wings in points: 69, 79, 69, 70, 67. Here are his goal totals in each of the past five seasons: 31, 32, 33, 30, 34. And I heard Elliot make this point, and I agree. The fact that the Red Wings haven't made the playoffs for most of Dylan Larkin's time in Detroit, he's got to wear some of that too. Like, he is not devoid of blame for the fact that the Red Wings haven't made the playoffs in 10 years. And you could argue, hey,
do you think that's fair though? Like, when you watch him play, do you think they're not making it because of him? I don't.
Not specifically because of him, but I'm sure, as Derek can attest, when you are a team leader and your team fails to deliver,
the leader takes the blame. Yeah, you're right.
The leader takes the blame. And Larkin, by the way, I think it was last season, openly questioned Steve Yzerman's direction at the trade deadline. He's like, we needed some help. And I think there's a frosty relationship between the two. But Dylan Larkin, at his best, is one of the most dynamic forwards in the NHL. Incredibly swift skater. Really good at getting to the high-scoring areas, so I can see the appeal. And we'll continue this conversation coming up next, 615-737-1025. Dylan Larkin reportedly has requested the trade from Detroit. Should the Predators, under new management, take a run at Dylan Larkin? 615-737-1025. We'll read your reaction, plus I'll tell you what I would prefer the Predators do with all of these assets if they're going to be looking for someone to add this offseason. We'll get to that next. 615-737-1025. We are broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning, Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. D-Mace, Van Gendendonik, 1025, The Game. Talking Dylan Larkin's reported trade request from the Detroit Red Wings and whether the Predators, under new management, should take a run at Dylan Larkin. Let's get to some of your reaction. One texter says, do not pursue Dylan Larkin. Too old, wrong timeline, and will likely cost us way too much for what I expect the return to be. Build around the older core we have and slowly transition them out for younger, older guys. Draft better and develop the players you have. Likely 3 year or so rebuild, but definitely worth it. That is the path to long-term success versus just getting us to the playoffs without being competitive and more of the mushy middle. I do want to touch on the rebuilding question because I was having a conversation with someone yesterday, and I'm going to read directly from the conversation because I want to make sure I share it the right way. And I want you guys to tell me if you agree. And all of you out there as well at 615-737-1025. This is the most accepting the fan base will ever be of a legitimate attempt to rebuild through the draft. This is the first time they've had a legitimate clean slate, fresh start person in charge. If they are bad by choice, this guy, meaning McFarland, will get a lot of grace for being willing to do something the previous 27 seasons of leadership would not. Do you agree with that idea? That if Chris McFarland came in and decided to do the dreaded rebuild for a lot of you out there, that he would be given a lot of grace because he's new, he's got no ties to the Predators outside of now being the president of hockey operations, but you know what I mean. Do you agree with that sentiment? That at this moment could be an opportunity for the Predators if they were to rebuild, that fans would be more accepting of it?
Probably so, yeah. I think he's got, as the new guy, and a guy that has some street cred, I think he could probably sell that better than some. I just think it would be very difficult to be that bad. You know, you have these visions of they're going to have the top pick, kind of bad, right? That's what, when people are saying, hey, they can be bad. They'll get the first pick in the draft. It would take a lot to get that bad. And I know they had the fifth pick 2 years ago. A lot had to go wrong for them to get down that low. Would you agree?
Yes.
That was unforeseen with the players they had on that roster.
Yes, it happened by accident.
Yeah.
Is what I say. It happened by accident.
Everything that could have gone wrong went wrong. Last year, it continued for the first quarter of the season. Everything that could go wrong went wrong. And then they went back and looked a little bit more like the team that in Andrew Brunette's first year. Maybe not quite as well-oiled, but a team that knew how to win and started to win a pretty high percentage of their games. So that's the trick. That's the dilemma, I think, as Chris McFarland said, I need to look under the hood. That was his way of saying, I need some time. I'm not going to tell you what I'm doing right now. He may already have an idea. My guess is he does have a sense of where he wants to go with it. But I think when you're saying, hey, they could rebuild this, I think he's going to look and say, you know, they already have a pretty good group of prospects here. Taking a step back, it maybe not take as long as it's taking in Detroit, or it took as, you know, for an Anaheim or an LA or a team that had won big for a while and they just were clearly at the end. There's something to be said for being in the middle. You're maybe not near where you need to be at the high end, but you're also pretty far from the bottom as well. So, again, let's go back to Dylan Larkin. One thing Chris McFarland said in the press conference, I'm just trying to make the team better. If you can, all of these draft picks they have, they're not going to turn all of these picks into NHL players for the Predators. You need to have some of those picks hit, but those other picks and prospects that, and also all of these prospects they have are not going to play for the Predators. They're not all going to hit. So I think the balance is keep the, in a perfect world, which it never is, find the guys that are going to stick, find the guys that you think are a surplus that you're willing to trade, and then take some of the draft picks and package them together. And if you can, does Dylan Larkin make your team a lot better if you can put that package together? I think the answer is yes. And nothing says you couldn't then turn around in a couple years and trade Dylan Larkin for to somebody else. I just think it's rare that a guy like that comes out. So in this, if Elliott's right and some of the players are going to say, you know what, I got some leverage here, I want to change teams, then I think Nashville as a, quote, destination city needs to be wary of that and take advantage of that. Vegas certainly has.
One texter says, no, timeline doesn't add up. It's not like adding Larkin makes the Predators a cup contender. It helps get back to the playoffs, but with no real shot at the cup, that's what we're trying to get out of the middle, barely making the playoffs and then going home. Would rather offer sheet Jason Robertson, blow all the picks, but still have the prospect.
But how would, okay, again, going out, if indeed they say we're going to make a run at Larkin and they go and get him, and they're trading futures for him, or they may have to trade futures and somebody that's on their current team. How is that not trying to continue to win, knowing that, especially if you believe in those young guys and what they're doing, how does that not sort of signal we're still trying to win, but we're trying to do it in a different way?
I think that's a really good question. I think you would envision, if you're going to go after Larkin, if you thought about that, you would have to be thinking, hey, you might have a window of a season or two where you still have a really productive Ryan O'Reilly, Steven Stamkos, Roman Josi, Philip Forsberg. But then by the time those guys have moved on, Dylan Larkin's still going to have some really good hockey in him. And now I've got a seasoned vet to go with the next wave of guys that you hope in another year, two, three, are going to really start to become the nucleus of your team. Now, Dylan Larkin might look at that and go, you know what? I've already been there, done that. I was that guy in Detroit. I don't want to do that again. So Nashville is not on my list, in which case this is all just hypothetical and we're wasting our time.
But do you think he can look at it also like this? Because, listen, Yzerman took the job. It's not like, you know, he came in with all these credentials as a GM. You know, he came in as a new GM.
He was in Tampa first, before he went to Detroit.
So what if he looks at Chris McFarlane and says, listen, where he came from, they're accustomed to winning. He was a part of building a winning team. So what if you look at it as a plus, even though, you know, this team may be getting younger and he may eventually be the centerpiece of it?
What I would prefer the Predators do this offseason, and McFarland acknowledged the other day that he's got to keep the age of the roster in mind right now. He understands that his top players are all in the latter stages of their careers. I would prefer McFarland to go out and try to find a young player who needs a change of scenery. And Willie, we were talking about this during the break. One example would be Mason McTavish of the Anaheim Ducks. McTavish is in his early 20s. He was the third overall pick in the 2021 NHL draft. He has seemingly fallen out of favor in Anaheim. His ice time plummeted by, let's see, Greg Wyshynski wrote about this, from 1653 last season to 1519 this season. So we saw this last year also with the Ducks. The Philadelphia Flyers traded for Trevor Zegras. We talked about Trevor Zegras, a young player, a flashy player, but did he have the whole package? He goes to Philadelphia. He had an awesome season for the Flyers. So there's always a bit of a risk when you take a flyer, no pun intended, on a young player needing a change of scenery. But McTavish is young. He's cost-controlled. He signed for 5 more years at $7 million per season. That would help fill in that age group that I've said is missing. You've got the 30-somethings. You've got the young up-and-comers, Matthew Wood, Zachary LaRue, etc. But you're missing that, what I call the middle class.
Right.
That 23, 24, 25-year-old, with the exception of Luke Evangelista. You're missing that group. Someone such as McTavish, for example, could help you fill in that gap, which I think is more important.
We agree on that. I would love to see them go that way. Anaheim is a rare team that has so many of these skilled guys. We talked about before how it doesn't work when you have 12 skilled guys. It's not about the 12 guys that all have the best chance of scoring a goal. That was happening to them. They're all young. They're all high picks. They're skilled. And they didn't have the grit. They didn't have the character. They needed to balance. And that's why the Zegers trade actually worked well for Anaheim, even though it worked probably even better for Philly, because it's hard to give up a guy with the skill of Zegers. And McTavish, I see, is somebody who's kind of in that same boat. He's been sort of passed up by all these other guys that they have, and he hasn't found a vital role for what he can be. And maybe on a team that lacks a little bit of his talent, he could thrive. So I'm all in on that. Larkin is a more known commodity, right? And there's no question, right? McTavish still hasn't blossomed and reached his potential in a lot of people's mind, right?
Yes, but through four full seasons in the NHL, again, he's 23 years old, four full seasons, 43 points, 42 points, 52 points, 41 points.
I mean,
in his early 20s.
That's okay. I mean,
yes.
But that's not.
But those numbers
that's
in
not
his
what
early
you hope
20s.
You hope that's not the ceiling, right? You
correct.
Hope that there's another level there.
Correct.
So how old would Larkin, how much younger, let's put it that way, would Larkin need to be for you to say he's in the range? A couple years younger?
27. 28 maybe.
Because 27, 28 tends to be the year where a guy needs to have that, he's going to hit the unrestricted free agency type of age,
mm-hmm.
right? So Larkin is just above it. I'm curious where Chris McFarland sees that for a guy who is such a known, consistent player like Larkin, who is, to me, he's a finished product. You know exactly what you're going to get, and I think you're going to get it for 5 or 6 years, not just for 2 or 3 years. That's intriguing. If you could only go for one or the other, I think it's a pretty good debate which one you would do. McTavish falls more in line with this next wave of players coming up for the Predators that you hope can be the makings of the next big nucleus.
Because the role, presumably, the role he hasn't been able to find in Anaheim, he would find here. He'd get opportunity. Yes, he would get opportunity here that he wasn't getting in Anaheim. One texter says, trading for Larkin does exactly what Chris McFarland said he didn't want to do. Just be good enough to make the wild card. He does not move the needle at all. I mean,
but why are we acting like that's the only move that you would make? I mean,
right.
You have an ability to make other moves too.
Right.
To try to, and what you don't know, and this is the hard thing, what does Matt Wood look like next year? What does Luke Evangelista look like next year? What about all the other guys? When does Brady Martin come into the picture? What does that team look like? That's the unknown that could have you looking at this team differently than you look. It's not like all those guys, especially the super young guys, some of them will probably level off, but some I think are going to improve with time, the more experience they get. Now, you could also say, well, what about when Steven Stamkos starts to show his age? And what about Ryan? That's a fair point as well.
615-737-1025. We'll continue to take your conversation, your reaction. Yeah, we'll continue the conversation. Words are hard. Well, to continue the conversation about Dylan Larkin and whether the Predators should take a run at him under new management, 615-737-1025. But coming up next, I do want to talk about another element of the Predators. We saw it on display at the news conference. Derek and I talked about this a little bit yesterday. I want to talk about it more coming up next. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game.
How about Robert Thomas for the Blues?
You know, I said, Mr. Haslam, is the goal here, you know, to make the playoffs, make a wild card, you know, feel good about that and high five each other, you know, or is the goal here to build a team that can compete and try to bring a Stanley Cup to Broadway? And he didn't hesitate, you know, the goal here is to try and win. And that's really quite honest. You know, all I needed to hear.
That was Chris McFarland at his news conference earlier this week, talking about the question he asked Predators owner Bill Haslam that sealed the deal for McFarland to move from Colorado to Nashville. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. I am curious to hear from Predators fans, 615-737-1025. How do Predators fans feel about Bill Haslam's work as owner? This is being considered a coup of sorts for Bill Haslam as Predators owner to lure McFarland away from Colorado. And if you listen to the news conference, it was clear it was a difficult decision for McFarland to leave Colorado. But as Elliot Freeman said to us and on this podcast, Bill Haslam said, what is it going to take? And Haslam was able to meet McFarland's demands. And I do think that is, as I said, a feather in the cap for Haslam as an owner. And Willie, Derek and I were talking about this a little bit yesterday. I do think it's important, especially during a time of transition, for an owner to be out front. And I do think that Haslam has done a very good job of this. He has been out there. He's been at all of these news conferences. He's been taking questions. I do think that is of benefit to the Predators in building back up some consumer confidence in the organization after some down years. I told Derek, I think the other team in town could learn a thing or two about having an owner.
It's a fair point.
Front and center during a time of transition. But I am curious to hear from Predators fans how they feel about Haslam's work as owner. But I do think that for someone who admittedly is new to the game and spent a lot of this season learning the ropes on how to be an NHL owner, I think as his first major decision, you've got to give him a lot of credit.
I agree with you. I like that he's been up front and he's weighed in where he feels like he can offer something. He tries to keep it fairly light, and he's also, I think, careful not to try to come across as, hey, I know everything about everything, which some owners in some sports, they're not afraid to say some things.
Like his brother, perhaps?
Is he really out there talking much? I don't
know if Jimmy Haslam is out there
No,
as
I'm
much.
Thinking more like the brash Jerry Jones, Daniel Snyder, George Steinbrenner, you know, the ones that, you know, are very brash and – I'm in charge, and let me tell you how this game's worked. And everybody's a lot of people are laughing when they're saying that.
I understand your point.
So there's you have to be comfortable, right? Bill Haslam, the advantage he has is, you know, having been a governor of our state, he's been out in front of people. He knows how a media conference works. He knows he's comfortable in front of cameras and things like that. Whereas Amy Adams Strunk clearly is not, you know, and that's you can't blame her for that. This is her background. So you have to be comfortable, and you have to be yourself. So that's maybe a discussion for another day. I would love to hear more about Rob Blake. This just happened. I didn't know that this was coming. If, for example, Rob Blake had been hired as the Predators GM, let's say 2 months ago, Rob Blake was a general manager for a long time in the league. He was a great player. It basically is hiring a Tom Fitzgerald mold, other than the fact that he has no ties to the Predators, which might be right up your alley, Adam. But it's a great blend of what we talked about. You have two new sets of eyes, experienced. They've done a lot of winning. Rob Blake was a great player, and he knows what it's like to be a GM. You have a former player's perspective, and then you have Chris McFarland's perspective as more of an analyst who has come up through the scouting ranks. So I like the blend. It's exactly what I hoped that they would do. I didn't know which order it would be in, who would be the number one, who would be the number two. But I think the model looks like it makes a lot of sense to me. Now, who knows how it's going to work, because nobody can predict the future. But I think you've got two guys that have really good credentials that hopefully will mesh together. They seem to know each other pretty well.
And I know, Willie, that you would get irritated when people would bring this up, the quote-unquote Predator way. And I think that these two hires, McFarland and Blake, show that the team is truly embarking on a new era. As you said, had Tom Fitzgerald been hired in the same role Rob Blake was just hired in, which is executive vice president of hockey operations, I'm sure I would have whined about it just a little bit. But the fact that you've got McFarland, who is a proven winner in the front office world, and Rob Blake, a seasoned GM, was the GM of the Kings for 8 seasons. The Kings made the playoffs 5 times in those 8 seasons. They kept running into the Edmonton Oilers in those many of those playoff runs. But it's a different perspective. As Ryan in Nashville says, it's finally good to have an owner who isn't afraid to play it safe and go get the big fish when he can. And I do commend Haslam for that. I don't know what McFarland's salary is. I can't imagine it's cheap. I also can't imagine it's cheap to bring in Rob Blake. So the fact that Haslam was able, or was willing, I should say, was willing to spend the money to overhaul the front office, I think, again, should fill Predators fans with confidence. Now, of course, McFarland and Blake and the rest of the Predators front office have to build a winner, and that's how they'll ultimately be judged. But I've seen a lot of Predators fans talk about a breath of fresh air, having new blood in there without previous ties to the organization. We'll see if people still feel that way if the Predators struggle, but I think a lot of Predators fans, based on those I've seen on the text line, those I've talked to over the past couple of days, they feel refreshed. They feel optimistic about the direction of the team, which is not something we've been able to say in the past few years.
I think the next step, too, is to see not only what you start seeing with their moves that will affect the roster, but also underneath the surface, how will this affect the infrastructure people, scouts and analytics people, and the other assistant GMs? Do they still have a part of this? Can they mesh together, or is this the beginning of, you know, some other changes internally? I have no sense one way or the other whether what the plan is there. There have been many times, for example, where a coach comes in, and let's use Peter Laviolette when he replaced Barry Trotz, the first coaching change the organization ever made. He brought in one assistant, Kevin McCarthy, who has been his right man, you know, basically he's been his right hand man for his entire coaching career up until that point, until Kevin McCarthy retired a few years ago. Like, he followed him all over the place. Kevin McCarthy was almost had as many addresses as Peter Laviolette, but he kept the rest of the staff intact. And so I don't know what will happen here, but the if you wanted fresh blood, you know, fresh ideas, you're getting that, right? With two guys who come, who have worked together before, they have a relationship. They both have different perspectives, but they have definitely come from outside of the Predator family.
This is a non sequitur, but it just popped up on my social media feed. So the NHL Combine is going on right now. Derek, I imagine you went to the Combine, right?
Yes.
I'm sure you had interviews with teams.
Yes.
Were you asked any off-the-wall questions?
Oh, man, that was almost 50 years ago, it seemed like. No, I can't remember. I can't recall any off-the-wall conversations.
So Caleb Malhotra, who is expected to be one of the top picks in the NHL draft, his dad, by the way, was just hired as the head coach of the Vancouver Canucks. Apparently, one team asked him this question. Quote, if you were on a desert island and there was no water, but the person next to you had a water bottle, would you kill them and take their water?
Jeez.
Wow. I mean, who would... I'm going to ask you this. If I asked you that question, would you say, yeah, I'm going to kill the guy and take his water bottle? I think everybody's response would be...
By any means necessary, I am a winner. I will murder.
Goodness.
No, I wouldn't do that. Let's try to find a way where we both can have some water.
You're not a winner if you say that.
That would be me, because we're both winning, because we're both going to be alive.
Well,
we both can help one another.
But you've got to have that.
Nah.
I think Connor is going to appreciate it.
Well, Willie,
this.
You know who not to be on the island with.
Right.
You think? Guy over you here. Think?
I want to know y'all's answers.
Exactly. I told you what my answer was.
You know, I want someone with ruthless aggression. I want someone who will kill.
I am not going on an Adam. I am not going on an island with Adam. I tell you that right now.
I mean, the only island I'm going on is one where I get to drink out of the pineapple. You know, they put the alcohol and stick the straw in the pineapple. Like
I haven't had one of those in a very long time.
So that was a question asked of a prospect at the NHL Combine. Wow. If you were on a desert island and there was no water, but the person next to you had a water bottle, would you kill them and take their water? I don't know. I wonder what his answer was. I'm not sure if he answered it or not. Let's go to our phone line, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com, and welcome in Mike. Mike, thank you for calling. Please go ahead.
Yeah, I'd just like to ask another technical question. Once the Dome Stadium is built and we've got the Titans playing in there, is there a projected cost of what a seat is going to cost with one beer, a hot dog, popcorn, and parking? Has that been projected out yet?
Thank you for the call, Mike. Speaking of non sequiturs.
Well, okay.
But we appreciate the call, Mike.
Well, it's a good time for it because we're right up against the hour here. But I think it's a great time to throw this in there. Go to the website of the Titans, see if you can find that out. You won't. they won't tell you what the tickets cost, PSLs cost. They give you this real vague, hey, 75% of the seats or 40% of the seats are worth this or that. They don't give you a chart and say, you know, here's what you're going to pay. You want this seat? Here's what it costs. Don't you think that would be good for the fans? The fans might want to know these things.
Yeah, you should, but. They haven't done it. Maybe they will do it closer we get to.
Don't count on it.
Clearly, they just asked you.
Yeah, I guess so.
Hair Metal Henry says, would I kill him for water? No. For a beer? Absolutely. 615-737-1025. It's about 5 o'clock. It's the offseason. It's time for Ask D-Mace. If you have a question for Derek Mason, call us, text us, 615-737-1025. We'll start that coming up next. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game.
Ready to put a little spin on your day? Then check out Chumba Casino's new online social casino game, Ryan Seacrest 10K Ways. It's free and packed with 10,000 ways to play, only at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.